I'm very happy now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Bridget Lindquist. She's Executive Director of the Española Valley Humane Society. Welcome.
Mary Charlotte, how are you?
I am okay. How are you?
I'm also only okay, but fortunately it's just seasonal allergies. Glad to be on your show again.
Glad to have you. How's the shelter? How are the animals?
We're kind of at an exciting time in the valley because we have seen steady improvement over the last 6 years. The number of animals coming to the shelter has dropped. A few hundred every year. The high water mark was probably 7 years ago when we received 4,500 animals.
Good heavens.
Isn't that remarkable? When you consider the community, come on, Española is 10,000 people. When you factor in the pueblos and round up, you're still at 17,000, 18,000 people total, generating 4,500 animals every year.
Unwanted animals.
Yeah. And then if you think, oh, what if this is only the tip of the iceberg? It was an alarming time to join this organization. But what we decided to do was just fix every animal we could find. And we have been outrageous with our efforts to do that, including paying people to bring their animals in, if need be.
For spay-neuter.
So today, this year, we will be under 3,000 animals at the shelter.
So that means spay-neuter programs are working.
I know. And it all feels like the realm of theory when you talk about it in our world. You know, you hear from HSUS and the ASPCA, just keep on altering animals, keep on altering. But you do have to reach a critical mass where you are spaying and neutering more animals than they're able to produce. So there's sort of a conventional wisdom, if you can reach 70% of your population or 80% of your population, and there's no true proven percentage. We decided to spay more animals than we were receiving at the shelter, spay or neuter. So once we reach more than 4,000 surgeries a year, sure enough, we started to see a steady decline. And today we're still doing about 4,000 surgeries a year, and the numbers continue to drop. So our challenge now is to start turning our eye toward those animals who are probably producing unwanted litters, but we're never seeing them. They're usually owned by folks who certainly don't come from a privileged background. Oftentimes they're addicts. Oftentimes they're having to work with organizations like the Food Depot to get their food every week or every day. So we're starting to partner with social services organizations to reach out to their clients and in turn get our hands on their pets.
How are the doggy abstinence programs going?
Oddly enough, they're failing miserably. You know, there's a kind of a thought in the valley that the happiest dog is one that's able to roam free. And you see that in a lot of second and third world cultures, and it's actually a perspective that I can appreciate.
Roam free meaning not stay in the yard or not be neutered or...
Yes, all of the above. Not be contained. Have the freedom, you know, to be completely intact and go out and carry about his day in his own merry way with lots of girlfriends. So that's been,
right.
We've had to kind of try to combat that.
Is that like projection?
Well, you know, if you're, I hate to say this, but if you're a God-fearing Catholic, it's an understandable perspective to have.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to believe in contraception, so why on earth would you do that to your poor dog?
At the same time, attitudes are changing.
Maybe. I would never presume that because we haven't had the opportunity to educate folks at a young enough age to believe that we're making a more humane community. I think what we have done is what used to be a very available commodity in the form of a dog or a cat is suddenly scarce. There are fewer and fewer animals for you to pick up when you go to get your mail down at the end of the route. So I think that's all we've done is started to reduce the number of unwanted animals, and in turn, maybe people have started to value the fact that dogs are not as available anymore, and they're more difficult to get their hands on.
There's still 3,000 of them a year.
Well, yeah, but at the present rate, within a year or two, there will be 2, and after that, we'll finally get down to about 1,000. And the goal is that instead of needing a larger or more lavish shelter will ultimately convert this shelter to what it ought to be, which is simply a holding place to overnight dogs that need to be returned to their owners.
Very interesting. That's a great goal. Now, how are you accomplishing all this? What are some of the actual programs that you're doing?
So last August, we started working with the Santa Fe Food Depot to reach out to some select pantry sites. What they do is they bring up commodities and food to the valley. And they tend to reach our part of the world the last 2 weeks of the month. So we've identified 8 destinations, and we're there alongside them giving out food, pet food. One reason why that collaboration is so effective is because people who had been receiving human food had been feeding their dogs instead of themselves.
Oh, my goodness.
Which is heart-wrenching, and it also falls short of achieving the Food Depot's mission of trying to keep people fed.
Yeah.
So we approached IAMS, and they gave us a tremendous amount of food, and we ended up distributing 500,000 bowls of food the last 6 months of the year to people in need and their pets. And what we found is we've cultivated relationships with these clients that have led to free vaccinations and are beginning to lead to free spay-neuter. But it's a trust relationship, so it takes time. And in the meantime, we're there every month with the food in hand to give to them, talking to them about the importance of getting their pet fixed.
So this is an innovative program. I've never heard of anybody doing this. Did you guys make it up?
We did. We did. Well, it helps that Sherry Hooper at the Food Depot is remarkable and open to unconventional partnerships. It also helps that as our time was slightly freed up, because there weren't as many animals coming into the shelter, we could begin to envision the next step for our organization. And we like collaborating with other well-run nonprofits. So the Food Depot was an obvious partner. IAMS, thanks to their generosity, you know, when you get 2 semi-truckloads of food and you're a tiny little shelter, you really quickly have to find someone to receive all that food. So it came to the Food Depot, and then we steadily distributed it from there.
So people are getting people food and dog food.
Yep, and cat food.
And cat food and healthier communities.
Healthier communities, healthier pets. I think we have to, as an organization, be careful about how immersed we get into this program, because while the welfare of the pets is important, right now we're still the first phase of our mission, and that's getting that animal fixed so that they don't have unwanted litters, because these households don't have an ability to care for more than one pet. They just don't. They're already stretching resources too thin to care for themselves.
And there's another dimension to it of how to treat pets so that they're happy and healthy,
yeah,
in their homes, making sure they're not always chained and things like that.
One thing we're discovering, partly through this partnership and mostly through another partnership we now have with the Santa Fe Mountain Center, is that folks who have been written off as poor pet owners because of their state in life can in fact be excellent pet owners. There is a balance that they're achieving with their pet. Their pet gives them a reason to wake up every day to go and seek help or seek service or assistance. There's a structure in the day that didn't exist without that animal. And it's a very precious dynamic, and one I've learned to respect. And probably I didn't have that perspective until these programs.
Now, there's another program where you're partnering with needle exchange programs to reach the pets of people who are addicted to drugs.
When I first joined the organization 9 years ago, the mayor at the time, Joe Maestas, and I had a long conversation about how it was important to be positive in our messaging in the community, because there was so much difficulty and strife. And he said, you do understand that, you know, 1 in 4 residents is addicted to heroin, and that is a huge burden for this community to carry. And it's not just young people, it's grandmothers. It's a multi-generational way of relating to each other through the drug. For the first time, we've been able to work with another organization who has reached out to addicts through Needle Exchange. They have a van that goes and takes different routes, visits each of these addicts. And it's a very anonymous, identity-protected program. Of course, it would have to be, because people are so suspicious and so worried about being busted. So we started, our form of partnership was to have one of our vets join the dare driver and go from house to house. And one thing Santa Fe Mountain Center said to us is, we're encountering a lot of animals in need, mothers with litters of puppies, and we're ill-equipped to address that need. So our vet, Dr. Carolyn Fletcher, could be there as a resource for those clients and offer some rudimentary assistance bring along some food to help with the situation. It's always important to us that we're not substituting for the food that they should be supplying, but we're trying to supply about a week's worth of food for any given animal. So we're just supplementing. Offer to vaccinate if need be. Offer to arrange transportation to the shelter if they need that in order to get their animal altered. And then try to continue a relationship with those clients. So we've only been doing that for a few months, and we're sort of in the learning phase, trying to understand how do we protect these relationships, make certain that we're not disparaging or not coming from a place of judgment about the activity they've chosen to engage in. Because at the end of the day, if the animal is happy and is doing something to enhance this human's life, we're okay with that relationship.
It's really, I mean, you're observing northern New Mexico and all of its very serious problems through such an interesting perspective, namely the perspective of people's animals.
Yeah, because what do you and I value about animals the most? Their lack of judgment, their resilience. And I think we think of ourselves as caretakers, and to be in a situation where you see, in many respects, animals caretaking for humans, or providing the reason to get out of bed in the morning for humans. It's a remarkable dynamic.
But they do that for all of us.
It doesn't devalue the relationship. It's been a fascinating experience for us. It's taught us too a lot about behavior at the shelter. You know, when you're managing an animal shelter, you tend to see the worst of the community because you're seeing so many animals that have been hurt. And oftentimes, the abuser is the one bringing the animal to you. So as a consequence, you develop some stereotypes over time about the community that are proving unfounded. So taking my staff out of the shelter, putting them in the field where they're giving out pet food, where they're seeing addicts, healthy family exchanges, but in an addicted environment, has been really beneficial for us too.
We're talking to Bridget Lindquist of the Espanola Valley Humane Society. It's very interesting to me listening to you because it sounds like this is a story in its early phases, and we need to sort of be updated as it goes on and as you guys learn and as your staff learns and as stories come in.
That's an excellent way of summarizing it. We're spending our time learning and doing our best to remove barriers as we encounter them. Sometimes those barriers are in ourselves and it requires additional education. Sometimes they're out in the community where we have to be able to react and say, of course people can't transport their animals. They barely have an ability to feed themselves. Of course they don't have a car. Of course walking 2 miles with your dog is untenable for them. It's a fun time for me to be at the helm because it does capitalize on something I do rather naturally, which is not to constrain sort of the evolution of something. And we have staff who are very open to experiences without bringing a preordained set of ideas to it. So they're coming back to me after, say, 3 months in the field and saying, okay, you know, this is what we set out to do, and we need to redefine our goals based on our experiences and try something else in light of what we're doing today. So it requires you to be very malleable, but we're good at that.
You have an event coming up which we wanted to let people know about, which is a concert by the great Mary Chapin Carpenter, 5-time Grammy Award winner.
Were you aware of that? I did not know that she was...
No, well, I'm just reading what they give me.
We are delighted to welcome her and so grateful that she's willing to support our benefit. This is the second benefit concert we've had. The last one was held in 2013 at the Opera, and it was Blondie. This year, we've decided to scale back and do something that almost feels a little more natural for us. Mary Chapin is well known to love her dogs, and in fact, she talks about songwriting and how sometimes... that's stimulated while she's walking her dog. She has a term of art for that, actually. She's coming to the Lenzic on Wednesday, April 1st. Tickets have...
April Fool's Day.
April. I have to resist saying no foolin' every time I say that out loud. But yeah, you know, Wednesday, it's a great day to celebrate halfway through the week. There are 70% of the tickets are sold, so there's still a few left.
Oh my goodness, that's great.
I know, and if you're not familiar with her music, or her very thoughtful way of expressing herself, I encourage you to learn more. And this is a great, easy way to support the shelter. We're not asking you to sit down and have dinner with us or go through any sort of painful event. This
I
is
think
just
it would be nice to sit down and have dinner with you.
Few would agree with you. So she's here on April 1st, and you can get your tickets at the Lenzic.
988-1234.
Wow. They really tell you well. Yes, yes. Or the Lenzic.org.
Lenzic.org. Excellent. Well, that's April 1st. And meanwhile, if people want to find out more about the Española Valley Humane Society, they can go to evalleyshelter.org. And boy, are there some nice dogs on that site that are available for adoption.
Well, you know, we have no control over that, but we do give them a thorough grooming and straighten whiskers before the photographer shows up.
Now, you've got a nice site and some wonderful animals. Bridget Lindquist, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Appreciate you having me.